This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 59 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max.
Hi, David. We've got lots of interesting UAV news, plus we have a clip from an interview.
We better start off with the topics, which is, first one will be Sense and Avoid by NASA and General Atomics. Something we haven't talked about, South Africa is about to approve their rules in early 2015, so we'll talk a little bit about African UAV regulations. The company that brought you the first delivery drone now wants to sell them to you. The Nevada test site is getting flirtatious. More arrests are due to flying over landmarks in New York. Batteries going boom in luggage. And lastly, and this is the big boo, cease and desist letters have gone out from the FAA. But first, Max, we have a special interview clip. Want to set it up for us?
Yeah, sure. This is a clip when we recently talked to Major General Charles Frank Bolden, Jr. He's the NASA administrator. He's been in that position since July 2009. The clip we have is from a longer interview that was just recently recorded for the Airplane Geeks podcast. And Charlie talks about NASA's activity to develop autonomous flight technologies with the UAS test sites. Also, he talked about focusing on sense and avoid and how NASA is looking at low-altitude SUAS air traffic control. Also, interestingly enough, they're finalizing an agreement with Google on sense and avoid technology for package delivery systems. And as I think will come out from this conversation, NASA really does want to help the FAA get out of, to get ahead of this developing market. So why don't we get started with this interview? Charlie, let's talk about drones.
Yes.
And I guess, unfortunately, the public, the press has sort of co-opted the term. And now, instead of saying UAVs or UAS or any of those others, remotely piloted vehicles, everybody seems to be using the D word these days. But yeah. I guess we're kind of stuck with it. But NASA has some interesting programs in that area.
We do. We are, you know, Jaewon Shin, who heads the Aeronautics Mission Directorate, has done an incredible job over the last few years of refocusing our efforts in aeronautics. We now have a new strategic plan. He has six strategic thrust areas that have come about from looking at what economic benefits and what cultural benefits can NASA help bring to the world if we change our focus in aeronautics. And so one of those areas has to do with autonomous flight. And so we have an extensive amount of work that's going in conjunction with the FAA and their six UAS test sites around the country. We look primarily at our primary focus is on improving the ability of drones to sense and avoid. In other words, providing them with sensors that enable them to detect the presence of other aircraft and other unmanned systems or other autonomous systems in their vicinity such that they can avoid any potential collision with them. Also providing ways for aircraft that are not automated, that have people flying them, to also sense and avoid the autonomous vehicle. So we're meeting with some significant success in that development. We now have a memorandum of agreement with the U.S. Marine Corps in aviation in general, but primarily focused on helping them to better get unmanned aerial systems from point A to point B, because there's a lot of work that they could do and want to do here in the U.S. and just in flying from an airbase, say a place like Cherry Point, North Carolina, into an operating area like 29 Palms, California, where you've got to go through a lot of commercial airspace, and you'd like to have them be able to do that without taking them apart, putting them on a truck or in another airplane and transport them all the way.
Now, we see in the press all the time stories about people using small multicopters, quadcopters, hexacopters, things like that, for a variety of different interesting applications. But as we know, the FAA doesn't really have the regulations in place. But isn't NASA doing something for the smaller drones in terms of air traffic control?
We are, and we're doing a number of things that may not. For example, we've got a test that's or a Space Act agreement right now that we're in the throes of finalizing with Google out at Ames. And it actually uses their autonomous vehicle, their autonomous car, but our focus, NASA's focus with them, is trying to develop, again, the sensors that we would use with low-flying autonomous vehicles, like a mini delivery system for a commercial provider that's taking mail, packages, food, whatever else. You know, we feel that what is more congested than just driving around the streets of San Francisco or through Ames? And so we're finalizing our agreement there. There are some fine points that have to be done on the agreement. But once we're done with that, we'll use our expertise in sensor development for, again, sense and avoid, you know, proximity ground ops, where you can transfer it into the low-altitude airspace, 1,500 feet and below, for example, where you might want to have a lot of these drone, quote-unquote, drones flying to do the types of delivery work that they want to do. We're trying to help the FAA get out ahead of the developing market, and that is very, very difficult for them, because the FAA has to deal with privacy issues, with a lot of other issues that have nothing to do with aeronautics at all. So we're trying to work on the aeronautics part, the sense and avoid part, while they work with the Department of Justice and others on you know, satisfying the privacy concerns of people.
All right. Well, David, as you might guess, we could have talked with Charlie for hours and hours, but he had just a limited amount of time with us. And as I mentioned, we'll be playing the entire interview on the next Airplane Geeks podcast.
Yeah, I having got the privilege of interviewing Charlie at the Discovery Enterprise shuttle swap at the Smithsonian. He's got an attitude that you just want to sit around a bar and have a couple of beers and just let him tell you stories, you know. So really good. And I really love the whole concept of using the Google smart car technology and converting it over to UAVs. It's a really neat concept that they're working on. But I guess we should get on with the news. And our first news sort of follows that theme from Charlie Bolden. This is General Atomics readies detect and avoid demonstration. And this was from NewZealandFlyersBlog.com. And General Atomics, who makes the Predator and Reaper, you know, those UAVs we used to talk about all the time because they always showed up in the press. We're actually talking about have a Predator B. And this is NASA's Predator B, which is equivalent to a Reaper or an MQ-9 in military service. And her name is Irkana. And she's going to be flown against a, quote, intruder aircraft.
Yeah, I love that Irkana name. It comes from a Native American Choctaw word that means intelligent, conscious, or aware. What a perfect name for a vehicle that's going to be used in this way. So the General Atomics is going to conduct first some software regression and hardware functional testing on their own Predator B, and they're going to do that at the General Atomics Flight Operations Facility in Palmdale, California. But then they're going to move the system over to NASA's Predator B, the Irkana, and that's going to launch off, David, I think 5 weeks of collision avoidance trials.
And that would be taking place over in the airspace over Edwards Air Force Base, or what was NASA Dryden, which is now NASA Armstrong. it's a complete package system. It's a scanned array of radar, which General Atomics has created, a Honeywell TCAS, or Traffic Collision Alert System, and a BAE IFF, which is Identification Friend or Foe, to become the DAA package, which is Detect and Avoid System. So you're taking multiple components and add them together to make one software package, software/hardware package that they can deploy.
Plus, that might be a new record for a number of acronyms, David, in one sentence.
Yeah, I know. We still got to make that dictionary. We keep promising. It is kind of funny, though, that General Atomics is saying DAA, and the general term seems to be sense and avoid instead of detect and avoid. So they're putting their own spin on the terms, because I believe Director Bolden actually used sense and avoid when he was talking in
his
interview.
I think so.
So let's go to the other side of the world, and for once it's not Australia, huh?
Yes, South Africa. The Civil Aviation Authority of South Africa says that it's going to finalize the UAV regulations by March next year, 2015. Now, I don't know, David, this story kind of sounds a lot like what we here have in the U.S. with the FAA. The South African CAA says until the regulations come out in March next year, that UAV operations in civil airspace, it's illegal, and operators could be subject to a fine or even up to 10 years in prison or both.
But there's teeth to their regulation. The FAA doesn't seem to have the ability to fine anybody, and I don't think anywhere we've talked over the last year we've talked about prison time. They're no means no, and I'm curious to see if we have anybody in that area to find out if they've actually executed either a severe fine or a prison time. And the other concept is flying on private land or in restricted airspace is also illegal. So, you know, you can't go to South Africa and fly your little quadcopter down there, huh, Max?
It's a pretty broad restriction. But like in this country, there is another point of view. Now, in South Africa, they have an organization, the Commercial Unmanned Aircraft Association of South Africa. And the director and chairman of that organization, he says that you cannot be fined by the CAA because there are no laws in place. Right? There's the part that sounds like...
I was going to say, we've heard that one before.
That's right. Now, of course, the South African CAA takes issue with that. And they say, quote, "Whilst it is a fact that currently there are no specific regulations which govern RPAS authorizations, Regulation 91.01.10 of the Civil Aviation Regulations 2011 prohibits any person through an act or omission to endanger the safety of an aircraft, any person, or property. The SACAA is obligated to take enforcement action against anyone disregarding the said part of the regulations." So maybe you can, maybe you can't. I guess as in the United States here, maybe you have to make your own decision about what you're going to do or not.
But it is interesting that we have another part of the world that we can slowly follow up on the regulations. Now, the CUAASA only has 70 members, and there are estimated between 400 and 500 UAV operators in South Africa. But most of them don't want to join the CUAASA because they want to stay under the radar of the SACAAA, which is a lot of letters. But it's interesting because the staying under the radar part, we're going to come back to with our last story of the night about maybe not staying under the radar or thinking you were staying under the radar and discovering you weren't. But
right.
Let's talk about Jeff Bezos and Amazon again.
Yeah, this comes from The Blaze titles. Guess which giant retailer has officially opened a drone store? Yep, that's Amazon.com. They've officially opened a, quote, drone store that right now, if you visit that website, it features the DJI Phantom and the Parrot drone. And then there's something on there that coming soon is the TechJet Dragonfly, which is listed as a Wi-Fi-enabled robotic insect.
So now are you going to use your Amazon Prime account to go out and get that DJI Phantom you really want?
Well, we'll have to see if the wife approves.
I won't tell the associate producer if you won't.
All right.
But yeah, Mark Fortin, the CEO of Cinedrones, thinks selling hobby-grade equipment without emphasizing education or safety is irresponsible. Well, Amazon will sell anything. But they do have a point. The Amazon is going for the Parrot and the DJI Phantom, and they're somewhere between professional and hobbyist grade. So I'm wondering what Amazon is thinking that their culpability might be in the future.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting issue because, well, you know, in cultures that are prone to lawsuits, you could, you know, open up that possibility. Now, I don't know if it was on the drone store webpage when the CEO of Cinedrones took a look at it, but right now there is a link to a webpage that's titled Fly Responsibly. And if you follow that link, you get more links. Amazon says these are links for informational purposes only, and it provides, as we record this, links to three other sites. One is the FAA UAS website. Another is to the 11-page Academy of Model Aeronautics UAS Flight Safety Guide. And the third link is to the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International Fly Responsibly webpage. So they are pointing people to sources for information, which it's good. It's better than nothing. But, you know, as far as providing training and that level of thing, you know, Amazon, I mean, you really can't expect them to do that. But I do like the idea that they're at least pointing people to resources to try to help make flyers aware.
Educated decisions.
Right.
So I'm sorry, but this is just a bizarre name for a company.
There must be something behind this that we don't understand.
And the company is Flirty. It's Flirty, right? It's got to be Flirty. Drone startup Flirty partners with the University of Nevada, Reno, to push UAV delivery forward. In October 2013, Flirty started drone delivery tests in Australia, and this was from Forbes.com. Well, now they've delivered several hundred deliveries of textbooks, as its partner Zuckel is a company that sells textbooks online. Now, being a textbook online household where books are constantly coming in and out, they're not being delivered by drone in this household. So Flirty is just, I don't know. Don't know what to say about this one, folks.
And Flirty is Flirtey. And like David says, we'll have links in the show notes. But what the article points out is that this company, Flirty, they've now teamed up with the UAS Research Center, the University of Nevada. And it's an interesting kind of relationship. Apparently, the university gets some equity in the company, and Flirty, in exchange, gets to collaborate with the university's R&D labs, where they design, manufacture, and research these things. They also get access to indoor flight testing facilities, and also the graduate students that always come along for free, air quotes around free, with universities. But there's some other interesting things. Flirty is going commercial with this in New Zealand. In New Zealand, they're launching something called AirShare as a kind of a UAV hub where you can get some information, but also where commercial operators can log flight information. So Flirty is apparently diving in with AirShare, which is supposed to go live later this year. And David, it looks like they've already started lining up customers for package delivery by drone.
Yeah, fast food, urgent parcels, retail, which is the Amazon model, and medical deliveries. Not sure I want to get my insulin delivered by drone, but they're pushing the envelope. And it is kind of funny that we talked about Nevada was the first test site to come online, and we talked a couple of weeks ago about the fact that they were looking for investors to fund the test site. So here we actually see one of those groups come together. So it's a symbiotic relationship. They get to do the testing, they get the funding, and everybody seems to be happy and flirtatious. So we'll, I think we'll leave that one on, and we'll go to our This Week in Stupid Activities segment, which I'm sure as we go on and do this over years, we're going to have more and more of this stuff. But we just finished up the U.S. Open in New York, and believe it or not, this is from NBCNewYork.com. Drone flying arrests Brooklyn Bridge in U.S. Open. New York Police Department made arrests. So here we actually have people flying drones when they're not supposed to. And unfortunately, both cases, the response was, oh, I didn't know I couldn't do that.
One of the guys who was arrested was actually a Russian who was visiting, and he was flying some kind of a drone around the Brooklyn Bridge. And some transit workers at a local heliport saw this going on, reported to the police, and he got himself arrested. And the other one was, as you mentioned, David, at the National Tennis Center. And he was flying around that. So he also got himself arrested. So, yeah, again, we've got an example of bad behavior.
All right. Well, this one's a little more dramatic than just. And this was from mobile.abc.net.au. And this was from our friend Ben down in Australia. Undeclared drone batteries spark plane fire at Melbourne Airport. This is really kind of scary, and this is one of those unintended consequences that people don't know how to manage batteries. And I guess this is something I think maybe I'd like to give a request out to our audience. Anybody who's in this battery industry and wants to come on and talk about the rechargeable batteries that this industry, that UAVs are so using, their risks, their dangers, and how to handle them, we would really appreciate it, because I think this is one of those really scary stories, huh?
Yeah, and if you look at the manuals to most any drone or quadcopter or anything like that, you'll see lots of ink devoted to safety aspects of these lithium ion batteries. And I mean, there are a lot of different kinds of lithium batteries. They're not all bad, but we have seen cases in commercial aviation in the past where there have been problems either with cargo heating up and causing a problem, or in the case, for example, of the Boeing 787, where the batteries that are part of the aircraft's electrical system have caught fire. So these are tricky things. And here we had a passenger who had a hard plastic case in the cargo hold, and he had a bunch of lithium ion polymer batteries in there. This was on a Fiji Airways plane. And just prior to takeoff, the captain detected smoke coming from the cargo hold. He called a mayday, and they were able to get to this plastic case. And I don't think there were any issues or injuries or anything. But boy, David, the photo of the case looks, like you say, really dramatic. I mean, this thing is burned and melted. And if this had happened in flight, I don't know what would have happened.
Luckily, it happened on the ground in a walk around, and that's how the captain spotted it, was doing the walk around pre-flight. But it's one of those unintended consequences. I don't think the battery issue is something that most of these people have an appreciation of. You know, our friend Parker has had an incident in his garage where one of the batteries caught fire, and he's very, very careful. And I sort of was terrified of even getting any near these things because they seem to be volatile. So, like I said, if there's anybody out there, we would love to have a conversation about batteries and, you know, how to store them, how to save them, and stuff like that. So, from battery bad news to okay, get out your shot glasses, because here comes the story of the night.
Yeah, the FAA. This comes from Slashdot. This is FAA scans the internet for drone users, sends cease and desist letters. That's something we've sort of now skirted around this topic a little bit, or maybe wondered about this. We've talked about how some people have engaged in activities that seem kind of commercial, or at least maybe a year ago we thought were commercial, and by today's standards would definitely be considered commercial by the FAA. And what Slashdot points to is that earlier this year, something called governmentattic.org made a Freedom of Information Act request, a FOIA request to the FAA for, quote, copies of any letters, emails, or other written or electronic communications requesting or demanding individuals and organizations to cease and desist, stop operating, or stop advertising unmanned aerial vehicles. So the FAA responded and came back with records of 17 warning letters, emails that were sent out by the FAA regional offices to individuals. Now, we'll have a link to this in the show notes. This is very interesting reading, but the list of offenders, or maybe we should say recipients of these cease and desist letters and emails, is kind of interesting and kind of eye-opening.
Yeah, and they go all the way back to July of 2012, and it's a mix. Surprisingly, a lot of newspaper and media organizations, more than I was expecting. I was expecting more real estate, etc. And they were found by newspaper articles and web articles. And two big ones is the University of Missouri, Missouri School of Journalism, and the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, also for journalism education. So evidently, they were using a drone for one of their classes and decided, and that was a commercial purpose, huh?
Most of the other companies involved here are aerial photography companies of one sort or another. As I said, reading the documents is kind of fascinating. They're written in a tone that I would not call, you know, over the top. I mean, I think that the tenor of the FAA documents is more like, okay, you know, you've been doing this, but let us tell you something about why you can't do that, and we know the steps we want you to take. So, I mean, they're reasonable from that standpoint, but interesting, the FAA communicates in almost all of these a list of three ways that you can operate UAVs. It says you can get a certificate of authorization, a COA. It says you can get an experimental certification, or you can be, the third one being, recreational hobbyists. Now, it also notes that commercial operation for aerial photography for hire is not allowed under, you know, any of those. So they're playing pretty strict, but this is interesting because, you know, we've heard about individuals and companies receiving cease and desist notifications, and so we have for you the actual documents that have gone out.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool story. It would be interesting to see these ended up. The latest one was June or July of 2013. It'd be interesting to see what other ones have come out since then, if they've sent out more. Though I do kind of wonder what governmentattic.org motivation was to do this. It seemed like I'm curious what the backstory was that prompted the Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah, I don't know. If you look at their webpage, they say that they provide electronic copies of thousands of interesting federal government documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act. It says fascinating historical documents, reports on items in the news, oddities, and fun stuff and government bloopers. So maybe their mission in life is just to, you know, using this method, the Freedom of Information Act, just to sort of pry out interesting, entertaining, amusing, whatever documents out of the government. And maybe it was just part of that. There could be an interesting backstory, certainly.
So I guess we should go to the video of the week.
Mm.
The video of the week. Evidently, Martha Stewart is not alone when wanting to film their property. Richard Branson, well, Martha has an estate. Richard Branson has an island.
Mm.
And this was from CNET.com. Gawk at Richard Branson's tropical hideaway via aerial drone. So we know that Mr. Branson is in all things that fly. So it's not surprising that he'd actually want to have drone footage of his little private island. And it's like what you would expect for Richard Branson. It's a private island and very impressive.
Yeah, I think you can vacation there for something like $27,000 a week. And so if that doesn't fit in your budget, And I assume that that's the case for almost all of us. You can watch Richard, Sir Richard's a drone video to get an idea of what you're missing.
So, yeah, I think that's good. So I guess we should go to some really good news as far as listener feedback. And that was we heard from Paul Brown. And Paul Brown was on one of our earliest episodes. And he's part of the organization called TATS, T-A-T-T-S, which is Taking Autism to the Sky. And he's using drones and UAVs, small UAVs, to help children with autism.
Yeah, and what he tells us is that they've been notified by the Washington, D.C. drone user group that they are a finalist for the Social Drone Innovation Award. And he notes that the kids are pretty excited about all that. He says they've already got the prize money spent. And he passed along a link to a video. It's their video submittal. So we'll have that in the show notes too. So invite everybody to take a look at that. It will make you feel good about how these kinds of craft can be used in really great ways. And it's also an opportunity. You can like their page and help them out. So thanks to Paul for passing that along.
We were very proud of that episode when we did it, and it's glad to see that it's keep going and they're following up with us. And it's the kind of story that when we set out to do this, that we wanted to do, which was good news about UAVs.
That's
so,
right.
Congratulations, Paul, and keep us posted on what happens and good luck.
Fantastic. All right. Well, I think that's about it. You've been listening to episode 59. Of the UAV Digest. You can find us at theuavdigest.com, where you can find show notes for this episode. We have lots of links in the show notes to the companies, to the UAVs, to all of the stuff that we mentioned. So it's a good resource to check out. We also want to thank Charlie Bolden, the NASA administrator, for giving us a little bit of his time. Again, if you want to hear the full interview, which covers aeronautics to a much greater degree and a little bit about space, listen to the upcoming Airplane Geeks podcast episode.
Yeah, and now that we've got an in with NASA, we do definitely have contacts, and I hope in the upcoming months we'll get the Akana team on, mm-hmm. as well as their Global Hawk team, which are currently this week starting to fly over the Atlantic into hurricanes. So that's really cool. Well, Max, where can they find us online besides the normal links in the show notes?
Well, you can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. Also, we have a Facebook page, UAV Digest on Facebook. If you want to send us feedback, we have an email address. That's feedback@theuavdigest.com.
And of course, we are on Stitcher and iTunes. Stitcher, you can stream it to your phone. And of course, we'd always love for you to leave a little feedback and some recommendations so other people can find us. And of course, we have our cafepress.com website, which is cafepress.com, the UAV Digest. And there you can buy some swag, some t-shirts, tell your friends about UAVs. And last but not least, if you'd like to help us put this little show out on the road and fund our expenses like servers, etc., we have a Patreon page. And the easiest way to do that is go to the UAVdigest.com and hit the large donate button.
All right, David, I guess that's a wrap for this episode.
I guess with that, we'll sign off. And this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.